Hello, welcome to the Comic Connoisseurs. Today we'll be talking about the latest Disney Plus streaming series for the Marvel MCU. We're talking about the Loki series. First, my co-host, JD from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also with us is Red Ink.
What up?
So, Loki is a weird series. It's a series that gives you a bill of sale in all this promotional material, all these trailers, all these promos, all these bits, where it feels like what they're pitching you is Loki in time. Loki having adventures across time and space with the TVA?
Time Variance Authority.
Yeah, the TVA, stopping variants from happening, and that's what we were sold, and that is not the series we got at all. And I don't think the bad part of the series is the fact that this isn't the bill of sales we got. It's a lot of other things, but let's go to the beginning. This series starts practically right where we saw this variant of Loki from the end of Avengers Endgame, the one that grabbed the Tesseract and transported it in the middle of Mongolia.
Because it's such a destination.
And he tries to do his spiel, and then the TVA shows up and fucking clocks that bitch and drags him in to be tried and punished for his crimes against the sacred timeline. Now, I have some complaints about the first episode. I feel like the first episode didn't try to do a lot in a very little amount of time, and it didn't succeed because the biggest problem they had was the Loki that the audience loves. The MCU-going audience loves the Loki at the end of Thor Ragnarok. The one that is a trickster, that is a liar, but also deeply cares about his family and in the end did the right thing. And, you know, the shot at the end of Thor Ragnarok where you have Thor on the throne, his trusted counselor and advisor Loki at his side, the warrior Valkyrie flanking the other side, and Hulk his strength rival and protector, you know, right behind. It was a shot of what the new Asgardian rulership would be, and that's the Loki people are expecting. Loki the trickster, the conniver, but the guy with the golden heart and will ultimately do the right thing. And the Loki we got here is the dang dirty bastard that just in his timeline 30 minutes before called Black Widow a sniveling cow. So they had to reconcile that Loki to the Loki we love real fucking quick and decided that a TVA version of This Is Your Life was the quickest way to do it.
Not surprisingly, I don't really agree with that assessment.
Red?
I don't know if it worked, but it kind of felt like it, yes.
Yeah. I'm not saying if it worked. I'm just saying that's what the writers are trying to do, is make the viewer mentally and emotionally connect this Loki closer to the one that we saw at the end of Ragnarok.
They weren't trying to do that in one episode. They're setting that up, sure, but it wasn't until the end of the sixth episode that we really got there, I don't think.
I know, but
because he has to go.
Go ahead.
He has to go through that emotional journey. It's not a catharsis, but he needs that emotional shock to his system to see, you know, the first Loki, like the somewhat redeemed Loki by the end of Ragnarok, who, you know, met his fate at the hands of the Mad Titan in Infinity War. Pardon me. And, like, you needed to, you know, it's Marvel, so of course you're going to get these callbacks to all these, you know, moments in the MCU thus far. But they didn't fix Loki by the end of that first episode. That it took all six episodes to get Loki to, you know, have this sort of emotional redemption for him by the end of the sixth episode, and then also leave us with that huge cliffhanger, you maniacs, you really blew it up. Like that, I was reading an interview with the director, like that whole, that last shot of the series was a reference to Charlton Heston, you know, finding the Statue of Liberty at the end of the original Planet of the Apes.
That's not the original ending.
I know it's not the original ending. I'm just saying that ending, that's what they're trying to, you know, homage there. So, I mean, the whole series was this emotional journey. And I don't know what Bill is sale. I've never really liked that phrase. It's like the promotions before the show set it up that this is Loki's Rick and Morty style adventures through the time stream. And that it's very much kind of like the intro sequence to Power Rangers Time Force. Cause when you watch that, you think watching that they're going to be going to all these different, like, you know, ancient Japan and medieval times in the land of the dinosaurs, and they know. I mean, the time travel is really only involved in them bringing the Zords from the future. So we're tricked into thinking it's going to be this one thing, and elements of the promotion certainly showed up in the series, but it was something else entirely. And I can't say that I was looking forward to having Loki gallivanting through time, but with the writers, they had this very specific mission statement, obviously, and they didn't do that, because if they did, like, gallivanting through time, this would have been, like, a 13-episode series, and, I mean, WandaVision's the longest one that we've had thus far, and there would have been a whole lot more filler than just, like, the third episode.
Like, the first episode isn't about to educate Loki. It's not to change him. Like, showing that this is your life thing. That's for the audience.
Yes.
It's for the audience to go, oh, this is Loki. Maybe we'll like him again.
Yes.
Maybe, like, it's not meant for Loki himself.
Yes, that's the thing. Is what I said was, it was to make the audience, get us to relate to this Loki like the Ragnarok Loki. It's for all for us. It's not for the character at all. Now, the biggest problem...
Like
go ahead.
He does show some regret, because he learns that he accidentally killed his mother.
Yes.
And he shows actual regret about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, to further talk about the points of this, some of the things I liked at the beginning, I think I said this when we did the first impressions, was... I liked the bureaucracy. I liked how, like, 1950s American bureaucracy it is, the very blatant ripoffs of the Fallout aesthetic of the TVA. Those things I liked. I always said that the props and costume designers for these shows are top-notch, and I will always say that. Owen Wilson? I gotta be honest with you. He doesn't really work for me on this.
What?
Are you high?
No. Did you have a stroke?
No, it's...
Are you on crack?
No.
Don't eat rat poison, Ben.
No, he's doing a fine job, but, you know, he's either, like, super subdued or full Owen Wilson. I don't really get a sense of Mobius the character in this yet. I get a sense of he's either... completely all business or all party.
Well, first we should mention that what Ben's referring to is Owen Wilson's performance as TVA agent Mobius. Yes. Mobius, who in the comics is directly patterned or designed to look like Mark Gruenwald, you know, one of the legendary creators of Marvel Comics. But I think that was one of the best castings in the series, is getting Owen Wilson, because he plays this very non-aggressive, unassuming sort of character, and he just has this certain, like, I think it just in general, that was, like I said, it's the best one. He just has this certain way about him that I thought just worked great for Mobius, you know. And it wasn't the best chemistry we've ever seen in Marvel movies, but I really like the kind of back and forth, almost moodlighting-esque kind of bickering that he and Loki had in the first few episodes before everything, you know,
went off the rails.
in the best way possible, but yes.
And that's something else I will say. Go ahead, Red.
I'm going to say that probably Mobius is my favorite character in the fucking series.
Okay.
Like, I know you're like, always too much Owen Wilson. Not really. No, you didn't say Owen Wilson's famous fucking line once in the whole series.
Yeah, that was actually one of my favorite fan theories that somebody put out. It's like the last shot of the last episode was Mobius coming upon some sort of information and then just going, wah, and then seeing like how they cut off the Avengers Assemble in Age of Ultron.
Like, to me, a good example is the whole water skiing thing. It's like, that's really...
Well, that's a clue to tell you that there were variants.
Yes. Now, the other things I will add, like I said, there are positives. There are positives to it. I think that he is a good character. Like I said, I think Owen Wilson is a great actor. I never said he wasn't, but I just feel like there was no in between in his scenes, in my opinion. He was either like extremely strict in business. Or, go ahead.
My review is so what. Okay. Let him Owen Wilson the fuck out of the place.
Okay.
Like, let him just fucking hump the fucking goddamn couch, being 100% Owen Wilson, all right?
Fair enough. But, going through the series, we are established there are many variants, and Loki variants are the most dangerous variants, but the TVA handles them. We also get a really interesting shot of a desk drawer full of Infinity Stones because they're just so common. Like, the most common variants, I guess, that they punish are people who try to steal Infinity Stones. So it's like they have a full desk drawer of them. And like, oh, yeah, we use them as paperweights. That does a couple things at once. It's trying to establish this new phase. The Infinity Stones mean nothing to this new phase, which I get. And it's also trying to... basically sort of have Loki look at the object of his desire. You know, he just spent the whole fucking movie trying to get this fucking thing, and a fucking desk clerk just threw it in a fucking desk drawer and using it as a paperweight. So it's sort of like saying, look, what you want is meaningless. I think that did more to Loki's character than the this is your life reel.
I mean, there was that, but I mean, with the whole Infinity Stones thing, I was talking with a friend of mine about that, and he's like, well, why wouldn't they work? He's like, well, they're outside the normal universe. Ebb and flow of, you know, the universe. Like, they're kind of that, whatever the area is between alternate timelines, alternate universes, so why would they have any sort of sway up there? I mean, that was really another thing about kind of breaking... That's the best thing about that first episode, is it's breaking Loki down so the rest of the series can build him back up a bit. And to have him, like, just have the Infinity Stones or gems or, you know, whatever, a couple of dozen different things they've been called over the time, and just not realize they're not going to do anything. Like, they can't help him.
When that drawer first opened, I saw like fucking two soul stones. I'm like, somebody died for those. What the fuck?
Yeah. Man, how many times has Natasha died in the multiverse? Jeez. And how many times did she just trip Clint and set him ass over tea kettle over the edge? And the thing I love about that first episode, and we talked about this before, it's like, you were charged with crimes against the sacred timeline, and the bureaucracy of the TVA, well, as much as I hated that, it's kind of a joy to see a character like Loki, who is, you know, chaos personified. He goes against any grain, and when he sees that chunky dude who's like, my dad's gonna have your job, and he gets pruned. And that, like, that weird echoey sound is like he fades from existence. And Loki's like, where's the ticket? Where's the ticket? Like, that whole, like, him going through the lines and having to sign the affidavit. This is everything you've said ever.
Like, you know, I said, the bureaucracy stuff was great. I like that sort of stuff. That stuff was great. That stuff was gold.
It was, the joke was, it was basically a DMV.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which kind of made me think of that one episode of Megas XLR, honestly.
But back to the show itself. They're hunting a very dangerous Loki variant, which is Sylphie, a female Loki, and this creates more questions than answers, because they... Go ahead, Red.
It was a disappointment for me when I found it was Sylphie.
So did I, yeah.
Like, two things. I thought the dangerous variant would end up being, like, Richard E. Grant.
Yes.
The 616 Loki is more powerful and even more clever than a regular Loki kind of thing.
Yes.
Then I saw her and I was like, oh, that's Amara. No, it's not Amara. It's the lame fucking knockoff from Young Avengers.
Another Young Avengers character. It's almost like they're building up something.
Yeah, I remember the Young Avengers. I did not remember the Young Masters of Evil. So I'm going to give props to Dan Casey and the Nerdist YouTube channel for that piece of information. I missed it. I had to go back and watch the last two episodes, because when the Loki, well, we'll get to it then, but there was a reference to a character I was hoping was going to show up in here, blink and you miss it, with the various Lokis, where you do see Throg.
Yes, we do see Throg.
And I wanted to just, like, how did you get here, like, Croaky, which is... what are people calling the crocodile Loki? Or would it just be nice to just have a brief, like, daydream moment where he's fighting Throg and a TV agent comes up and just, you know, prunes him and takes off?
Well, the grunt of Throg was actually was Chris Hemsworth.
I did not know that.
Yes,
that's awesome.
And, you know, we're skipping ahead. Like I said, we're introduced to this idea of Sylphie. And, you know, with the little cartoon at the beginning where Loki's in line at the DMV, talks about how, you know, the second you step off your path, you know, if you're late for work for 5 minutes, then the TVA shows up and they fuck you up. And that sort of implies that the TVA is watching so closely that if there's, like I said, 5 minutes late for work, you're fucked. So how could a female Loki be born without the TVA showing up? Oh, yeah, geez, this is a complete change, or a black
nerd.
They actually kind of mentioned that in the show, like her Nexus moment. Like, if she hadn't killed Thor, she probably would have grown up.
That was Kid Loki.
No,
it was Kid Loki who killed Thor.
Okay, I thought they said that with the... Yeah, I guess they didn't explain that. Okay, no, then.
They just show her playing on...
playing with toys.
Playing with toys, and that's it.
Yeah.
Or maybe she hadn't played with those toys, she would have not been pruned. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yes, and from all intents and purposes, the moment Odin picked up a female fucking Loki, the TVA should have showed up and pruned her.
Yeah.
But...
And we're supposed to believe a little kid who just minutes before was playing with toys is, even if it's a Loki, is so fucking resourceful, resilient, and intelligent to be able to, like, skip through time and space for years until growing up until adulthood. And, okay, Red's about to say shut up, nerd, again. I don't care. They established in the Thor movies that the Asgardians and the Jotuns age super fucking slowly.
And she's been tripping through time for years. I mean,
we're not talking about years. We're talking about thousands of years, because in the first Thor movie, when
Thor says he's 20,000 years old.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's like the same thing to explain when they went from Tennant to Smith, and
they ruined. Okay,
Ben, calm your tits.
Actually, in this episode of Star Trek, explains everything.
Yeah, no, it's like they. I forget how old Tennant said he was at one point in his run as a doctor.
900
And then
years
when
old.
Smith came in, he says he's like 998 years old. And there's a couple hundred years between the time that Tennant was the Doctor and then Smith. So it's just, we don't see her growth, obviously, but she's, you know, time travel. That's all you have to say.
All right.
But I will grant you, it does, like, how smart was a kid Loki that, you know, she gets busted by the TVA, and before they prune her in, like, the kangarooiest of all kangaroo courts, and she steals this tempad and goes on the run for years and is just clever enough to figure out temporal
20,000 years.
Yeah, 20,000 years, and to figure out that you really hung on that for some reason, and to figure out that, you know, she hides in apocalypses because no matter what she does in something that absolutely is going to fuck everyone's shit up, she can hide there and the TVA won't notice anything.
All right. Well,
you don't know exactly, like, it's never set her age, and you don't know how fat, how quickly fucking Asgardians mature.
She's a Jotun.
Either or, whatever. You don't know how much they, how fast they mature. So they could mature the same speed as humans. And she could be 20 years old.
But anyway.
Thor talks about growing up with Loki and Loki doing the snake trick when they were 8.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like some weird geometric regression. The more they age, the slower they physically age. Like, anyway.
All right, look, I'm not going to go all autistic here, and I apologize if it seems like I am. I just wanted to point out that one thing, that by using these characters who are established to have very long time lives, you know, they're basically saying that the TVA has been dealing with this problem for a while now, a long while, and not to mention, you know, goes from kid female Loki to playing with toys to being able to enchant a lot of fucking shit and make illusions and all the powers. Like
this is a terrible hill to die on, Ben. Jesus Christ.
Let me die on this fucking hill, man. Let me
Because if you die on this hill, it'll take up the entirety of this episode. We need to move on.
All right. We'll move on. Moving on. So
one thing you
go ahead.
Sorry, Ben. Okay. The one thing you mentioned, like that, info cartoon that Loki saw in the first episode about how the TV, I did like how they kind of styled the animation, that it looked like something out of the 1960s, which may or may not be a nod to the Marvel cartoons of that era.
It's a nod to Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah. Okay, that. And also one character that I kind of, there wasn't a whole lot with the character of Miss Minutes, but having Tara Strong voice this AI clock mascot of the TVA, I enjoyed what little we had. It was applied sparingly. It was applied well. And I kind of subscribe to the fan theory that she was going to turn out to be the big bad, you know, the man or woman behind the curtain sort of thing. And I was glad I was wrong about that.
Like, first episode, I knew it was fucking Kang. Even told Ben that. Ben's like, it's not Kang. They're not going to premiere Kang already this quickly. I'm like, well, it's fucking Kang. They're blue-faced Kang, lizards.
It was Immortus.
You're right that it was Kang. You're absolutely right that it was going to... This is an introduction to Kang. I know that the main one we saw was Immortus, but Red's absolutely right. It was Kang. I didn't think they would, because Kang is a character that ties... Well, to the Avengers, but he also has ties to the Fantastic Four and very, very, very tiny bit with the X-Men. So it just felt really weird that they would be inserting a door for Kang this quickly.
Well, I mean, it's definitely accelerated, but I mean, it's like...
They already cast the guy for Quantumania in like the third fucking Ant-Man movie.
Yeah, and I did say he was playing Kang. But I mean, the revelation of Kang and the fact that there was once this the Council of Cross Time Kangs, which is something I've always loved about the character, that there's this Roman Senate-like setup with you know, there's like a Cat Kang and a Lizard Kang, and Tim Curry dresses Frankenfurter Kang, probably, for all we know, because, you know, infinite possibilities and infinite measure. But the revelation that, like, as soon as I saw, like, by the second episode, it's like, no, it's going to be Kang or Mortis, something like that. And when we see at the end of the fifth episode where the Sylvie and Loki enchant Aleth, or was it Aleth, or the cloud monster, and you see that kind of castle with, like, the glowing spire, I was like, oh, God, that's Limbo, and this is Immortus' temporal keep. And I wouldn't... I mean, Immortus is a alternate variant of Kang, you know, years down the line.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. But
it's fucking weird, because... But some kind of fucking fight happened in the comics, some bullshit. And Iron Lad and fucking Immortus are not fucking Kang anymore.
Yeah, I think, well, they separated him as, it was the Avengers Forever comic series where they fully separated Kang and Immortus' timelines through the use of a Deus Ex MacGuffin crystal thing. But yeah, it's, when we find He Who Remains, which I had to do some research on that. Like, originally it was He Who Remains. He created the Time Twisters, and when they were defeated by Thor, they were recreated as the Time Keepers, and thus setting up, you know, Immortus down the line. I like how they kind of incorporated that almost forgotten piece of Marvel lore into, you know, he wasn't called Immortus in the show, but come on, he was Immortus. And I like how they made him less of this stodgy stick in the mud, this is how everything has to be, and Jonathan Majors' performance was much more inspired by Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka. And I found out that Jonathan Majors is actually a trained clown. Like, he went to clown college for that, and I thought that was really cool that he incorporated something like that into his performance.
Hey, Homer, what are you doing with your potatoes?
Yeah.
I hope this actor, if he does play Kang in the future, which he probably will, doesn't do it jokey. Because
I don't care what anybody says or what you told me. I'm going to clown college.
Because, yeah. You know, it's just such a weird scene where he's just up there sitting around just... doing what he wants and
lounging,
taunting, jokey. And Kang is such a straight-laced character. The stick up his ass has to stick up its ass.
I don't think they're going to play him funny, Ben. This iteration of Kang Immortus, That's this one he's done. And if Immortus comes back in the future, like how he discusses with Sylvie and Loki about, you know, I'll probably just come back and have to do this shit all over again. He gets really salty about it. I love that. But I don't think for a moment they're going to play Kang jokey. He might have some moments of subtle humor, but I think for the fact that he's playing the villain in Quantumania, and then you see that statue at the end with, you know, it's Jonathan Majors in the traditional, ripped from the comics, like Kang garb sans the helmet, and just that music and that slow panning shot, like, you know, he's going to be a villain. He's, if he has humor in him, it's going to be on the level of Josh Brolin's Thanos. You know, he'll have some sly humor in that, but it's not going to be jokey the way Immortus was.
Well, he did say he's fucking insane.
Yes. And yeah. I hope that is the extent of why this version is fucking insane. I hope that they don't try it. I hope the next time he shows up, he's straight-laced, all business, and threatening and scary as fuck. That's what I want to see. But we'll see what happens.
It's not going to happen.
I know. We're going to get some Whedon-esque dialogue and shit.
There's really nothing wrong with Whedon-esque dialogue, Ben. It's not the best, but it's not bad. But
that's my Galaga.
Yeah, that was RDJ, and there was nothing wrong with that line. It's gold, and you know it. But I was talking with a couple of friends last week after we saw the finale, and a friend of mine posited, well, if Loki's the doctor, then Kang's going to be the master. And I think there is something to that, just to kind of frame the characters in a certain respect. Now, it definitely, if Kang's the master, he's going to be some of the early, more sinister Kangs or masters. He's going to be like that. He's not going to be like Eric Roberts' master from the ill-fated American Doctor Who movie, or I can't remember the name of the actor, and he's a really good actor, but he's the one that played the master during Tenet's run. Those listening, if you've seen the Tenet run of Doctor Who, you know who I'm talking about. I just can't remember the actor's name. But I think that was a pretty good analogy, because Loki's now the hero by the end.
Master. It's just fucking... The worst master is the latest one.
Did they have one after Missy?
Yeah.
Okay, because I haven't seen anything past that first Capaldi season. So
let's get off of Doctor Who and back on to Loki. Now, some of the things I liked in the first episodes was when they went to the Renaissance Fair, and you have Loki try to trick him. I like the fact that even when he's pretending he's working with them, he's still trying to do subterfuge. He's still trying to get under their heads. He's trying to fuck with them. I like that, but it's almost like they completely abandoned that for a while until Sylphie's mission became his mission somehow. And we use the term burning episodes in some of the other shows, and there is a burning of episodes with this whole him and Sylphie bonding on the asteroid planet. That was burning an episode.
Yeah, it helped to develop the relationship between Loki and Sylphie, but it was so much more filler than it really needed to be. Although they did have that callback to the first Thor movie where Loki, you know, finishes the drink and slams the cup down, another, which I appreciated. But yeah, it's I would say it's not unnecessary. It's just they could have done something more with like Mobius trying to track them down, and you know, seed some more. You know, does Ravonna Renslayer know more than she's letting on? You know, they could have done more with that third episode. I did like in the second episode where they go to confirm Loki's theory of, you know, Sylphie hiding in apocalyptic events. They go to Pompeii and they just kind of let Tom Hiddleston off the chain for a brief moment. And that was just entertaining as hell for me.
Yes. Now,
also, do you think the writers hate Walmart because Rock's cart? Like, Jesus.
No, I think that's a play on the Roxanne the corporation as well.
Roxanne.
Yeah, whatever. But, you know, the idea of Loki's hiding in you know, Sylphie hiding in the apocalypse, that's not a bad idea. That felt like that could have gone somewhere. That felt like it could have been like a hunt. But again, like, we have someone who has been on the run for all her life, regardless of how long that is, and she has a plan to fuck up the TVA, and her plan isn't even to fuck up the timeline, it's to empty the TVA so she can go in unopposed and find the timekeepers. That's her plan. That's the plan. And at the end of the show, it sort of boils down to she finds Immortus, and it's like, okay. And Immortus explains what's going to happen. He says, if you, you know, you can do two things. You can kill me and run amok, or you can become the new timekeepers and keep things going. But if you kill me, then all of a sudden there's going to be like 1,000 kings and they're going to fuck shit up. And And Loki isn't even saying, you know what, maybe we should try to figure a third option out. But Sylvie has had this vision for so long of, I want to fucking stab the guy in charge. That's her only thing in her head. So she wouldn't even listen to Loki when he said, wait a minute, let's figure something out. Because both options suck. He's not even saying he agrees with Kang. He's like, there's got to be a third option. But she's like, she wants what she wants. So it's like, she fucks things up.
But she's... And I'm not saying she's right or wrong to fuck things up. I mean, that was inevitable because clearly she's fucking traumatized from however many thousands of years she's been running from the Time Variance Authority. Like, she was a kid and she's playing with her dolls and she got these weirdos in armor and glowing nightsticks come in and tell her, he's like, you're not supposed to exist. And then she's forced to go on her own. Like, she's... Oh, God, she is so left of center, it's not even funny. And it's no wonder that all she could do was think about, like, she's been focused, laser-focused on this, I'm going to find the timekeepers, I'm going to fuck them up, and I'm going to go drink margaritas. That's all she's had in her head for years. And then she sees this moment, like, the whole romantic relationship that everyone says, like, they have a moment, they have a moment of genuine emotional attachment to somebody, and everyone spins this off that, oh, they're going to bone, like, there's no other reason, they're going to bone. It's like, people can, like, love each other without doing this, which is why how many people have been hanging on. It's like the one episode that his sexuality is fluid.
Is it really boning or is it masturbation?
Yes,
bit of both. But that's the thing, it's like, I thought that was a great moment, you know, they have this connection and then the internet runs away with it and says, oh, they're in love and blah blah blah. Like, I've seen people have those ranty it's like, I've never
more
gonna
people
watch.
Mad that Loki wasn't bisexual.
Yeah, and also, why is or is that not an important thing? Like, the guy likes to get his freak on, big deal. Although, I love that moment, and then you see how it for some reason, them, even though it's two different Lokis, that somehow creates a nexus event. Like, I don't understand that logic. How does that create a nexus event? Like, what, if they didn't go back to the TVA, they were just going to die together and be happy, and that was going to ruin the sacred timeline? Like, I don't get it.
There's lots of things we don't get. I mean, this, like I've said in past shows, there's two different edicts that they have to do for these shows. Number one is they can't do anything or introduce concepts or storylines that are so complex that they can't explain it in, what I say, a couple minutes of exposition in a movie. I don't think what we see here is going to affect the next movies, except for maybe Multiverse of Madness, and not in as big a way as people think. I know we have Promise of Season 2, which is unusual because I've always seen these series as mini-series, not a full-on serial that's going to have multiple seasons, because they aren't written like regular television shows. They're written like mini-series, or as Red once said, they're written like movies that have been stretched out.
Yeah. I mean, you can... Loki, I think of them, as much as I would like to see another Falcon and Winter Soldier, or Cap and the Winter Soldier now, Loki is the only one that I think was, whether or not they did a second season, the framework was there that they could do this. And even the director of the show said that, you know, they were not planning on a season two, but they saw, you know, how popular the show was. Now, yeah, if we're getting a season two, and I think the best, or one of the things I like the most about this series and probably the second season, is it's a bit of a bridge builder. Like, it's laying the groundwork for the next Thanos level threat, which, you know, I was hoping it was going to be Galactus. Clearly it's going to be Kang, and, you know, we're going to build from there, and it's getting these things out now. And now that they've refined the Marvel method, or the Marvel cinematic method, I should say, for, you know, they build things up, they have unique stories, they got little bits that will track back into the next movie here and there. I'm looking forward to that. Now, I think we should talk about the best cameo in this series, and it was in episode 5 where we see the Thanos copter. Because
that episode was nothing but continuity nuggets for fans, like the Frog Thor.
Why do you have a problem with continuity?
I don't. I'm just making a point. I'm just saying the way it is. Why do you assume I'm having a problem with it?
Because you never say that I enjoyed that. Right, it was continuity nuggets. Now, did you guys see the Living Tribunal head?
Yes.
Okay. I did not, like I said before, we were talking about Throg. When Loki wakes up in that world and he sees, you know, Kid Loki, Boastful Loki, Croaky, and I know it's classic Loki. I'm just calling him Richard E. Grant because, goddammit, it's Richard E. Grant. Where they go down the porthole into Kid Loki's bunker. I had to go back and watch a second time because I thought that was just a miniature Thor in the jar. I didn't notice that it was Throg right away. But yeah, and I had a friend of mine saw that. He's like, why would Thanos have a helicopter? And I had to, oh, you dear sweet innocent child, let's go to the Wikipedia. So if anything,
shut up. That's why.
Yeah. He's like, why would Thanos have a helicopter? He's like, why would Spider-Man have a car that drives up walls? It was the 70s and it was the thing. But I know out of the alternate Lokis, outside of classic Loki, which one did you guys like the most?
Classic Loki stole every scene he was in. I just love how bad that bad cosplay costume looks.
Yeah. And you know, I like Boastful Loki and Kid Loki and Croaky, that was all that. But, yeah, I mean, the best was Classic Loki, because, like, when had trouble following the dialogue there, but, I mean, when Loki and Sylvie come up with the plan that they're going, I can't enchant anything, you just haven't tried hard enough. And they enchant this living cloud, and before they're able to do that, Richard E. Grant just, like, proves why he's the goat of Loki's, because he recreates fucking Asgard at the end of time like that. That was awesome.
Yeah.
I loved how he screamed glorious purpose. That was just like, mwah, chef's kiss.
Yeah.
But again, I feel like this is a series where it feels like a lot happened, but in the end, I think nothing happened.
A lot happened. It just I think it doesn't seem like a lot happened because there wasn't much resolution. It, like I said, it's setting stuff up for stuff down the road, and eventually we'll come back to that. Now, I have a theory. Just go with me on this. The Immortus's keep there that Sylvie and Loki get to. I think that was where the previous Council of Kangs met, and then after the Multiversal War, and we have the Sacred Timeline. Like, whatever reason, Immortus is like, you know, fuck it, I'm living here.
Now, something else I have to mention is when. When Loki followed Sylvie through the portal in, what was it, episode 2, episode 3?
2.
I said to Red, I think there's going to be a Council of Lokis. And I'm kind of glad that there wasn't in the next episode, but they kind of did it with Kid Loki, Alligator Loki, Black Loki, and Classic Loki. But it was so not a Council of Loki scene that I actually kind of like, okay, you know, that subverts my expectations in a good way.
Loved it when President Loki showed up. Just that look, that smile on Hiddleston's face was like, what did you expect? I expected that.
And one by one, you figure out they all betrayed each other?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what Lokis do.
That's how he does. Now, like, when you look at that Immortus's keep, they're like literally the Wizard of Oz overtones, like where he shows up like literally from behind the curtain. And he like if he had done like the walking role that Gene Wilder had done from like the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory movie, I wouldn't have been surprised. But it's
I the love walking role he's in?
Well, in the original Gene Wilder movie, like where he's doing that yeah. walk with the cane out, like that role that he did when he got up to the gates, I wouldn't have been surprised if Jonathan Majors did that.
But he had to actually fight to keep that in the movie.
Really? I thought that was just part of the script.
No, he improvised that.
Oh, cool. Now, I mean, to speak about Jonathan Majors' performance, I love it when actors put their all into a character that, like, very quickly I glommed. I was like, I like this guy. Now, whatever happens to him, happens to him, but I love this character. I love this actor. And I think it's very rare, especially in the Marvel movies, that we don't have a lot of moments like that where the performance is just right. Now, I mean, obviously that's it for me. You guys may or may not feel different, but that whole, when there's an exposition heavy show episode in a series like this, I appreciate it when they at least break it up with visuals and it's not just two characters sniping back and forth across a desk. You know, they got the little, you know, take your eyes off of stuff, you know, a little bit of mental trickery. So, but overall, what did you guys think of the last episode?
I think the biggest disappointment for me was I was expecting Lady Loki to show up.
Yes, same here.
Because they hired the actress who plays Sif.
Jamie Alexander.
Only to have her kick fucking Tom Hiddleston in the balls repeatedly.
Yes.
It seems a waste.
Yes.
It's nice to see Sif back, but yeah, it's a waste. And some unintentional comedy seeing Hiddleston like, okay, oh, here she comes. Okay, yeah, just do it. You know, smack, and she's on her way.
Pretty much. It is a complete waste because there's lots of fan favorite other versions of Loki. Kid Loki is a big fan favorite. Everyone loves the old conniving giant horns classic Loki. Crocodile Loki is a weird favorite. But Lady Loki, as Red said, is something that people really like the aesthetic of for a long time. And it feels like that's the one they personally tried not to do by doing this Sylphie character.
Like, why not do Amara the Enchantress? Because, one, Amara and Loki work together all the fucking time.
Yes.
In the comics. Two, they're also both members of the Masters of Evil.
And if they had done that, we would have gotten Carl Urban playing the Executioner for a bit longer, mm-hmm. which I would like to see again. No, I think the problem with not them, if they ever do Amara, who maybe she'll show up in Love and Thunder, fingers crossed. But I think just the base character of Amara the Enchantress, is a lot of people would consider problematic because it's this very good-looking woman using her feminine wiles to get what she wants, and basically all she wants is to jump Thor's bones. And if they did that version of Amora, probably wouldn't fly, and the snowflakes would burn down the internet because how dare you disrespect women like that or whatever bullshit they're on this week.
Can but the for a new motive, like, it's easy.
Yeah, I'm just saying if they did that, the original Amora, they wouldn't be able to pull that off because people would lose their goddamn minds. But to have a, you know, seductive, manipulative, kind of Mata Hari-esque Amora, you know, and work her, that, you know, maybe she could be like an agent of Kang or something like that. You know, he's promised her, you will have Thor once this is done. You know, but yeah, it's another Asgardian that, you know, I wish they would have done. And they should have made her, hell, she could have been, you know, taken the identity of the variant and been on the run and then reveal herself that it was me, the Enchantress, the entire time. But already we've put more thought into this than the writers have.
Right. Like, I'm going to go back to what I said in my previous episode, that of all the series, Falcon and Winter Soldier is the most cohesive. It has the most structured plot, A to B to C, plot point to plot point to plot point, story flows like following a standard narrative structure. WandaVision, complete mess, where they tried something experimental for the first third, rushed the plot in the second third, and the third third was super fucking, oh my god, we gotta wrap this up. Loki is just weird and not in a good way, in my opinion. It is, there are definitely highlights to it, there are definitely good performances, but things have been introduced at the very end that doesn't have time for you to breathe in. Plot lines were started at the beginning that are not fulfilled, and if this was just a sit back and enjoy the ride, here's Tom Hiddleston chewing the scenery as Loki some more, I'd be fine with it. But like, I think the Sylvie character, if anything else, drags this down way too quickly.
I don't know if it drags down. It definitely muddies the waters. You know, it's there and it's interesting, but it's, you know, it's too many cooks kind of thing. Like I said before, I love the ending where Loki comes back. I mean, it's setting up stuff down the line, and we'll get this resolution whenever they drop Loki season 2, which probably isn't for a couple of years at least, where he comes back and he finds, I forget which hunter, I think that was B-15 and Mobius, and they're like, yeah, you're an analyst, right? Who are you? And just that moment of Loki, the F? And then he sees the statue and, oh dear God, what fresh hell is this? I love that ending. That is a great hook, and it's a great cliffhanger. I just hate the fact that we got to wait 2 years to get any sort of resolution in this particular story, never mind the stuff that's set up for, you know, the coming threat of the multiverse war part 2. So, I did have a theory about how they're going to use Kang, or at least set up Kang in going forward. Now, you guys know that they famously killed Wolverine and then they brought him back because nobody except Uncle Ben stays dead in Marvel Comics, right?
And that's a maybe anyways.
Maybe. Question mark. Asterisk. But when they first started bringing Wolverine back, before they had the dedicated Return of Wolverine series, they had these Marvel, like MCU-style end credit pages of, you know, Wolverine, he has the time stone, he's moving through events in the Marvel comics. You know, it's just this wing nun. Like, it's some of the stuff set up and some of it isn't. I think they might try something like that with Kang. Like, have either the end credit scenes or have brief scenes of, you know, blink and you miss it kind of things. And I think that's going towards building whatever Kang's master plan is going to be whenever, you know, let's say Avengers 6 comes out. So that's my theory.
My theory is the reason why they're focusing so much on Kang is they want to do X-Men, and they're going to do some time travel fucking shenanigans in order to introduce mutants.
Yes. Because now nothing is set in stone. Now they can do anything.
I still think mutants are going to happen because there was 3 snaps on Earth in the space of 6 years. And that's what unleashes the mutant gene.
We'll find out.
I mean, yeah. I mean, so overall, I agree with you, Ben. The Loki is a very confusing series. And if you're a diehard Marvel fan who's into minutiae and lore, you will get a lot out of this. In terms of best of the three series so far. It's like WandaVision, you know, I like it. It's an almost incomprehensible slog. Then Loki, and then Cap and the Winter Soldier, because I think it's by benefit. It's an action movie, and you really have to try hard to make those confusing or unenjoyable.
I don't like to be preached that I'm an evil piece of shit at the end of a fucking series.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing I want to add to this is some people gave really weird, like, Zordon's calling you, JT. Maybe you need to go to the power grid. Anyways, like, some news sites jumped at the fact that, oh, it says Loki's bisexual somewhere and shit like that. It's like, who cares? Who cares?
Twitter cares. Well, at least 1% of fucking Twitter that
is really loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I see it, I'm like, okay, who cares? It doesn't make him an instantly better character or worse character. It's just something that's there because mythologically, Loki slept with everything. So Loki slept with a six-legged horse. That's a female horse.
Because he went to Tijuana that one time and he just wanted to try it.
He was trying to slow down the masonry men from making a wall. It's... look, read the fucking Eddas, man. It doesn't matter. Loki's fucking Loki. Loki can be whatever the fuck he wants to be. It's like, who cares? It's so weird that everyone jumped on it. It's sort of like the whole fucking Zemo is woke bullshit. And Zemo wasn't even fucking woke. Zemo was doing the most anti-racist racist thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And no one caught in on that.
I caught on to it because I've been in a room with racists before.
Yes.
Yeah. So overall, would you guys recommend Marvel fans watch Loki?
No, not this one. No.
Would you say the same, Red?
I wouldn't say the same. Watch it. Don't hype it up. Don't think it's going to be the greatest fucking thing since sliced bread. It's fucking boring. And it's a slog.
Yes.
I don't disagree. I mean, I'm all for world building and I enjoy the minutiae and the lore, but yeah, it's... You have to go in prepared to accept this isn't going to be WandaVision or Cap and the Winter Soldier or anything that you've seen in the Marvel before, which I appreciate them experimenting with different storytelling formats like this, but you know, it's a little too left of center for a lot of people, I'm gonna guess.
Well, I don't think it's even that. I think Red has said something to me once about when you're making a product that people expect some consistency with is this isn't the place and time to experiment. This is when you have to give something that's consistently the same.
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying consistently the same superhero story, just consistently the same quality. And Red's right about that. I feel like they sort of threw that by the wayside when they made this to they focused a lot on the beginning aspects. The middle meanders a lot. And, yeah, it's fucking boring. It is fucking boring. So, Loki, the series. Hey, go ahead, Red.
To me, it has the same problem that the movies have. Like, if your movie isn't called Avengers or Iron Man or Captain America, your movie is basically about selling the next product.
Yep.
Because if you watch the first two Thor movies, they fucking suck. And they're all about, the first one's about introducing Loki, so he'll be the big villain in Avengers. The second one is introducing the fucking, whatever, the Power Stone, I can't remember what fucking stone.
The second one was the Aether.
Whatever.
The one that went up her. That was the Reality Stone.
I hear different stones all the time.
The red one was reality, and space was the Tesseract. Mind Gem was in the Scepter. Soulstone was on Boromir.
But yeah, that's the whole thing is... The movies were advertisements for other shit, and they never focused on the actual fucking characters. Except when he got to Thor Ragnarok, because they ran out of shit to fucking push. It was like, hey, an actual fucking Thor story. And Captain America was an actual fucking story, like Winter Soldier and the fucking first Captain America.
And also Civil War, that's another story. Like,
and the other, like, that was to introduce Spider-Man.
Yes.
The other thing is the fucking Guardians of the Galaxy is another one that everybody's like, oh, it's so awesome and shit. It's just pushing another fucking another stone. That's the whole fucking thing it exists for. And that's what all three of these new fucking series are to me. They're here to push the new narrative.
Yes.
The Young Avengers are coming. Every fucking show so far has introduced some part of the Young Avengers.
Yeah.
Kang is coming. Each show somehow connects to Kang. I don't know how, but apparently there's people who fucking wrote fucking essays about how WandaVision and the Falcon and the Winter Soldier connect to Kang.
You're right. These are not telling single simple narratives. They all have to connect the dots. And these aren't even important puzzle pieces because, as I said, there's the rule of if you can't explain this in a couple minutes of exposition, they aren't going to make it. So you don't even need to watch these series to know what the next big Marvel movie is about. These are inconsequential. As much as we ranted about Black Widow being inconsequential to the future movies, this is even more so.
Well, Black Widow was to introduce the new Black Widow.
Which could be done in 2 minutes of exposition.
Mm-hmm.
This is completely inconsequential. It's not even a part of the same narrative. It's just divorced.
I refuse to say Captain America and the Winter Soldier because to me that's a fucking downgrade. The Falcon is this long established fucking black superhero. Why does he have to take up the mantle of a white guy?
Yes, exactly.
In order to be better.
Yes. I agree, and I feel like so many people just are so hung up on the fact that they can own it. Like people love these characters not because they're the same race, but because the character themselves are interesting. Like, you know, I got to wrap this up before I give another rant about why Silk sucks. And Silk does suck, by the way. Anyways, Thor, the Loki TV series, I would not recommend. JT kind of gives a half-hour good recommendation. So does Red says if you want to watch it. So basically, this is the most lukewarm reception we've got so far. This is your host Ben,
JT from Saskatoon,
Red Ink,
and we're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.
Okay. You okay there, JT?
Yeah, no, I gotta go back to work because it's one of those days where we record on a Thursday. That means I gotta go back and finish the liquor order, so I gotta jet.
All right, so it's just one of those days?
Yeah.